Time to, if it's necessary. So, Aleph, if you remember, we spoke last week. Any questions or comments on that?
Perhaps one could argue that if, as I thought, monitors our actions and gives us and subjects us to schar onesh on a very minute level every single day, surely what is arguable that he would owe it to us, quote unquote, that he would place the challenges before us in a very, very specific way that would challenge us at exactly our level, and that would be fair in terms of whether we fail or pass our test. In other words, that if we say that Hashem sort of let us let us go to the laws of nature and things that events that happen to us are not necessarily directly from Hashem, they're just whatever happens to us. Therefore, a test that's thrown away could be much too difficult or much too easy, and therefore, wherefore schar ve'onesh? How can we be punished for something we can't possibly overcome, or rewarded for something which is so extremely easy that we
probably... Okay, so he doesn't deny accountability or that, and not here, but in other places, he talks about the Gemara Shoshana, the Gimel Sfarim Niftachim, and that... Everyone has to give an account once a year, Rosh Hashanah, and every day, and time of death, etc. He's not denying accountability, Chas v'Shalom. What he's saying, though, is that, as I said before, in other words, that the rules, in other words, because Rosh Hashanah will not bend the rules for every individual, and he won't change nature from A to Z just because I have to do some shopping or whatever. And therefore he assumes some kind, obviously assuming accountability, and the person is rewarded or punished. I have to emphasize the following. He quoted the Ram, or not here in the passage I brought to you from his parashat Eov last week. He quotes the Ram approvingly. The metaphysical systems are coming from slightly different places. The Rambam is coming from a different perspective, but there's one point here which I think is important. The Rambam thought that laws of nature, I think this came up in the past, the Rambam thought the laws of nature are extremely important from a religious perspective, because they reflect divine wisdom. I think we used the metaphor, the programmer, and the customer support, right? So, from the Rambam's point of view, Hashgachat Klalit is part of that same. It doesn't necessarily follow from that, but that I think once he says both, there's a certain connection between the two of them. In other words, that because Rambam designed the world in which, if you want, the greatest benefit is to the greatest amount of people. You know, the laws are the best way to run the world. This is part of divine wisdom. There may be some inherent limitations as such, but the Rambam is willing to live with that because he believes that the material world has built-in limitations. He says that not only about this, he says that about birth defects and the like, that matter is imperfect by definition, that only non-material things are perfect. From this point of view, the Hashgachat Klalit reflects a sense because Baruch Hu's ruling the world from the proper way in terms of divine wisdom and setting down laws and the like. Now, as I said last week, it can be overturned, but the price, when you do that, there are prices. In the world of the Rambam, a miracle has a price. The price is that you get a favor or you benefit, but the system is revealed to be not 100% consistent. The system is, so to speak, exposed as being lacking. So even I can explain that as a special favor, but there's a certain price to be paid. Now, the more you're tzaddik, if you have a shgacha pratit, so your needs are programmed into the system. The system takes into account the needs of VIPs, so to speak. But the Ramban is a little different. But the Ramban, nature doesn't really exist metaphysically. It exists practically, not metaphysically. And he's talking about a different thing. He's talking about a relationship, not about natural, not about laws of nature, because that's not that's a part of his system. But he's talking here about relationships. I mean, the relationships exist. Now, the way the Ramban has human existence is part of a relationship. When I say relationship, I mean an attitude, in other words, a connection between the personality, not a rational, logical decision. In other words, if I like you, feel close to you, it's a relationship. It's not because I believe that you're the best person in the world. I love my children. Not because I believe they're the smartest or the best. Of course they are. But it's because I love them. I have my closest relationship. And the relationship is because they're an extension of myself, because they're part of my seed, my offspring, whatever the reasons are. What we call quote-unquote chemistry when we talk about romantic relationships. And Ramban has the man-God relationship as being a relationship, first and foremost. Zera Avraham Ohavi. Now, that's Hashgacha Pratit. Hashgacha Pratit means an intense relationship. It's a relationship which is extremely intense. But it's a relationship with everybody. Because Baruch Hu Azavan, and if I remember last week, I used the metaphor of the principal of the school. He teaches if he's a good principal and he's a good educator, he teaches everyone properly. He doesn't, teach everyone like dirt, and only the people he likes he treats properly. He treats everyone with concern, and he treats everyone with love, and he treats everyone with deep caring for their education, for their personality, and for their well-being. Nevertheless, he may be an outstanding Talmid that he has a special relationship with. Or vice versa, by the way, it could be also a Talmid who's extremely problematic. And that's the idea of the Midrash, parenthetically. Ein ben David bar b'dorsha kulo chayav kulo zakai. Kulo chayav, you get a special relationship because you have to treat at times, the worse off you are, the more intervention you need. Now, in the same way, Jibman has this, Avram Avinu, no, because Baruch Hu loves all Am Yisrael. He loves every Jew, and he cares every Jew, and tries to benefit them. But there are certain rules to have the world, in the balance between man and nature and the like. There are certain rules. So if there's a hurricane, even if you're a God-fearing Jew and a good Oved Hashem, you go to Shul three times a day, but nevertheless, the rules of nature apply to you. If you be Avram Avinu, now the same is true, by the way, of the United States government, right? If you're a good citizen, they'll do whatever they can to help you. But if the president will be stranded in a hurricane, they will send in special forces and they'll mobilize resources that they won't for other people. Now, I'm not saying that because Baruch Hu is the United States government, Chas v'Shalom. But the idea that relationships, I mean, I'll tell you, my grandparents, Aleihem Shalom, my father's parents, used to have this constant argument. My grandmother was from Lita, with a much more aristocratic tradition, which my grandfather wasn't. He would always say, the Gemara about Hillel, when they found Hillel on the rooftop in the snow, Ro'i ze lechalel lavet haShabbat. So he would be deeply offended morally by, remember, Ro'i ze, anybody, you should be chal Shabbos and anybody. And it doesn't make a difference whether you're, you know, Hillel HaZaken or a plain Jew. You know, anyone should be, and my grandmother said always, Yechiel Hanach. If you're the president, you know, the president of the United States will get better treatment than you get. When you go to the hospital, he'll go to the hospital. Believe me, the president will get better treatment than you'll get. And it was this constant argument, and this is part of the dilemma here. On the one hand, it offends our moral sense. But on the other hand, there is a sense in which it's not that everyone else is bad off. It's that Hashgacha Pratit is special and unique. Now, you can argue it. As I said before, and I think the Haredi world nowadays rejects this totally. It's like this. I don't think the Ramban is on the radar in terms of the contemporary narrative of Hashgacha. Neither the Ramban nor the Rambam. But, and now the reason they do it is because of this, you know. Everyone has a favorite son, because Baruch could have millions and zillions of favorite sons. Ramban's point, though, is that nevertheless, Avraham Avinu is a favorite son in the sense and form that we are not. Now I can also explain, or we should explain also maybe why this is so. That means why Avram is really different than us. Let's say, I'm afraid to get to go too much on a limb over here, but I would say, presumably, if you have to ask yourself, why is Avram being so different, so unique? It's presumed because Avram Avinu negated his existence or subordinated totally to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Most people basically are over the Hashem and love the Kadosh Baruch Hu, have a relationship to Him, see their existence dependent upon Him, but I don't know whether most of us negate our existence. Meaning, take the parent-child relationship. Obviously, children love parents immensely. Hopefully, if they're not adolescents, at least. That's it differently. Adolescents love parents as well. They just have their issues. Children love parents. We'll try to help them. Nevertheless, if the child has to choose between himself and the parent, let's say this, at the least it's not an easy choice, and probably he'll choose himself over his parent. I tend to think. To give you an example, like the Ramban says in a statement which is certainly true, I think, even though it's less romantic than what we taught in Gan. Adavta l'riacha kamocha. So Ramban says in Vayikra, this is adavta et riacha kamocha. He thinks that the lamed and the et make a difference. This is why. Because chayecha kodim chayecha vercha. And Torah doesn't expect you to love your friend as yourself. The Torah expects you and to love yourself more than your friend, if it's either or. And maybe morally it's correct as well. And therefore, chayecha kodim chayecha vercha. If you read it in 1984, and that point is made extremely powerfully, he doesn't say whether it's good or bad, but it's presented there that at the end of the day, a person always chooses his own benefit. What Eov will say in Eov in one word, not in 200 pages, or bad or v'chol asher la'ish yitein bad nafsho. I think what does the Satan say there? The Satan says, because Rachel says, if you remember the frame, because Rachel says to Satan, Eov, is it Sadi Ish Tam Yashad Re Elokim Vesamei Ra? So the Satan says no. So he says, so they make the wager, right? And the first time around, in the first round, so he destroys his home, he destroys the building, the kids disappear. And then Kadosh Baruch Hu back to the Satan, you see, I was right. What's the Satan's response? Or ba'adov v'chol shalish yitein bad nafsho. As long as it wasn't directed at him, even though it was the closest people to him, it was his home, it was his property and his children. As long as it wasn't directed, it doesn't prove anything. Because a person will always sacrifice his property and his children. That's the way Satan at least presents it for himself. And now, it's a bit tricky because on the one hand it's presented there as a statement of human nature in general, but it's made by the Satan. And B, the statement made by Satan about human nature happens to fit Eo's persona felt the safer. In other words, if I say it telegraphically, Eo has one fatal flaw, one tragic flaw, which is he's egocentric. He's absorbed in himself. He's constantly looking in the mirror and admiring himself. So therefore, it's hard to know what the Satan is saying there. And the one you say about human nature, on the other hand, it's a statement about this particular individual because this really corresponds to his character. Which then takes us to the question, is Eov an everyman or not? Which also takes the question, is Eov a literary figure or a historical figure? I'm saying it's very tricky here. But at the end of the day, let's forget parents about children. Because you often see a mother willing to sacrifice herself for her children. You can see it, a mother runs into flames to try to save her children. But look at the opposite. Usually, the reverse is not so. What Ramban will say in Vayigash, that the parent loves the child more than the child loves the parent. He didn't say those words exactly, but that's his basic observation. So, at the very least, I'll say the following. Usually, now, that doesn't mean that the child has a close relationship with the parent. He has a very close relationship with the parent. He loves him very much. He cares him very much. It just means, if it's either or, now, this answers a question also about the man-God relationship. Right, the Ramban in that passage I quoted before, "Ve'avta l'reacha kamocha, ve'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha." The Ramban draws a line that man is supposed to be willing to be moser nefesh, right, out of avat Hashem. Now we know that that's what halacha requires, but it's a tall order. And what is Avram Avinu? That's the akedah. And the Akedah is exactly that point. And the Akedah basically said, I will subordinate my existence to your demands. Now that's what creates Ashgacha Pratit. He's identified with Kadosh Baruch Hu totally. He negates his existence, he subordinates to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now, if you want, that's one way of describing Avram's added value. Now, there are other people, it's like this, maybe others also run, we say in the Slichot, you know, Akedacha, Tirisha Olam, you know, and look at Akedot, Am Yisrael has done over the generations, and there's certain people who have been Moser Nefesh, and they very well be that they're the same level. Rambam talks more in Vuchim about a different idea. He talks about that Avraham Avinu doesn't really live in this world, he lives in the world above, that his existence doesn't take into account human emotion. He has a split screen. He's constant contemplation, Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's like, it's like this, you know, if you go to nursery school, and when you're in nursery school and you're watching your child's play, you're trying to think about what's going on in business or at work, or about your learning and the like. The Rama is Avraham Avinu, living Balam Hazeh and merely thinking always Balam Haba, which means that his whole existence is non-worldly in a sense. All I'm saying is that the way the Rabban views it is the basic relationship is one that cares and concerns. We think here that Hashgacha Kalit doesn't mean that you're not taking into account because it doesn't care for you. It just means that there's certain rules. Now, I'll just say one. Before I answer, I'll just say one final point on this. So, on the one hand, the big advantage of the other view that is a chaperit and everything is because Baruch Hu is omnipotent. He knows everything. He can do everything. Why not assume Hashgacha Pratit throughout? And it was like, why limit him? So to speak, Hashgacha Kalit either assumes a limitation or assumes a lack of willingness. In other words, it assumes either a certain obliviousness to the world or to man, or it limits. So why not say he knows everything? Now, on the other hand, though, it puts you in almost impossible situations, particularly the crisis of Tzadik V'Radlo, Shavit Tovlo, is exponentially compounded because it happens all the time. What can we say? You know, unfortunately, many, many, many good people, you know, what we call, you know, Erech Yidin, and Ovdei Hashem, Shomrei Torah Mitzvos, and many moral people, Lavdafka Jews, many good people who live God-fearing lives, which are moral and ethical and the like, have tragedies. You know, good, bad things often happen to good people, and the more you assume Hashgacha Pratit, the more you're getting into big trouble with that problem. So you could say there's a shkha pratit, and how do you resolve the problem? There's a whole, I can give you a whole shopping list of answers that you know, philosophers and theologians have given to this problem. So that's one way to do it. The other way is to say, let us, in other words, let's accept the fact that nature, natural disasters, wars, catastrophes, disease, strike good, natural disasters strike people, wars, disease, plague, whatnot. And so therefore, let's, if you accept that fact, and you're accepting of that, so then of course tzadik v'ra'lo becomes much more livable. It's put differently, the Ramban's theory simply corresponds with our empirical observations much better. It's the gap between what we observe in our daily lives. What can I tell you? You know, I'm not a zakein, but I'm rated tzadik ne'ezav. And therefore you have to add, so the more you say Lo Reiti Tzadik Ne'ezav is only this unique tzadik that he's talking about, but so to speak, run-of-the-mill tzadikim or regular tzadikim can be ne'ezav, the gap between the reality and the claim is narrowed in a way which is much, much better and much simpler. The problem of the limitation, so you have to assume, like I said before, it's not really a limitation, it's a policy which is designed to advance other principles, or to put differently, it may be inherent in the system. When Rambam says to you, I'll give you an example. The Rambam says as follows. I'll talk about cancer because the Rambam's point there is easy to get across. The Rambam is like this: matter is imperfect. And what's cancer essentially? It's right, cells multiplying, dividing, and multiplying out of control. When the mechanism which regulates cell division basically runs amok and you lose control. The basic mechanism is vital for life. Without the basic mechanism, there's no life. Only have to regulate. The regulation, you know, it's like a car without brakes. Now, the Rambam basically said to you, the world needs this mechanism. Without this mechanism, it can't function. Then it'll save you, in the same way Chazal say, there's no procreation. It's the same way, without cell division, there's no life. On the other hand, Rambam will tell you that matter is imperfect by definition. So if you need this mechanism, it's inevitable that every cell will spin out of control. Now, why is matter imperfect? You can argue the point. The Rambam thought so. So the mind says, so if you either accept that, or I said before, you think that there's certain reasons why Hashgacha is a bad idea to have it prati because of divine wisdom and general laws and the like. So you know, either you accept the limitations being inherent, or you assume that divine wisdom is dictates other policies as well. No, Hashgacha is not the only factor in the mix. There are other factors here, including natural law and etc. So that will bring to this. Bottom line, you can take the position because Baruch Hu knows everything and he controls everything microscopically, or if you want, he micromanages every person. That will, on the one hand, divine omnipotence can do that certainly, but. I'm not bothered by problems like why should Kadosh Baruch Hu be concerned with my petty life? And I believe He loves all of us. But the question once more is, does it really correspond to what we see and what we identify? Take the other way, the Rambans and the Rambams, you're coming much closer to what we observe in the world at large. Why doesn't He want to do it to my community? So yet they have to explain either the world as created doesn't offer that option, even for Kadosh Baruch Hu, or as I said before, you assume that it clashes with other principles. And now the second point is, I said, said last week, tefillah, this doesn't have to negate tefillah. Tefillah means, even though this is normally, make an exception. I'm requesting an exception for my special case. In other words, it's like asking for protection. So you're, you know, there may be general rules, but you can always ask that you be the exception, you get protection. If it works, good. If it doesn't work, so no complaints. But you can ask, you know, for a special for special treatment, and that's what tefillah is about. So I don't see it necessarily clashing with tefillah. Yes, sir.
What about on the large level, like a hashgacha klali, like a huge tzaddik baralo, like the Holocaust?
No, so the Rebbe himself says in the beginning, and I didn't emphasize this enough before, but that was the next point I was going to make. The Rebbe also draws here, he talks about difference between the species and the person. You also have to add between Am Yisrael as a nation and individuals. Now, when I say Am Yisrael as a nation, it doesn't mean only the collective's existence. We talk about like the Holocaust and the like. You're talking already as a collective. And yes, in other words, there's a point at which we say, in other words, the idea that the Rebbe doesn't intervene, this policy, so the same way you can talk about different levels of tzaddikim or different levels of hashgacha, also different levels of how it affects the tzibur at large, or how great the Chilul Hashem is, I think absolutely. The Holocaust, you can talk about Chilul Hashem. You can also talk about, it relates to Am Yisrael, and also that the suffering simply is out of proportion to what's happening, and that which should require intervention. In other words, to put it differently, when you, if I use the metaphor of the school again, and what's more, whenever you talk about these kind of issues, you have to use a metaphor, parent-child, husband-wife, Eved Adon, to use a school metaphor again. Go to the principal, sits in his office, and he doesn't, you know, go out and he doesn't wander in the yard during every recess. But obviously, if you see a bunch of kids bullying someone or abusing him, he'll go out and intervene. And even if you'll normally say, okay, you know, if you see them roughing him up slightly, so say, let him be a man and learn to get along alone. If it will overstep boundaries and become dangerous, right, he'll intervene. So I think we have the same expectation here also. So even if I say that there's Hashgacha Klalit and not Hashgacha Pratit, the Holocaust still remains a problem, and a significant problem. This doesn't solve that problem necessarily. It's not, in other words, this Rambam is not an attempt to basically wash away the issue of the Holocaust or sweep it under the carpet. It's not to talk about, you know, our daily individual lives. That still remains a problem. One thing I think is true, that the more you talk about letting the world be, you know, it's letting the world be run according to natural laws. Now, this could be with Hashgacha Pratit. It could be with Hashgacha Klalit. The more that you emphasize Hashgacha Klalit as a general policy, it's easy to say, because we'll decide something in history to not intervene. Or to put differently, decide upon Hester Panim. But I think you can use Hester Panim regarding the Holocaust, even with Hashgacha Pratit. That's what you decide to do at that point. And you can use it, and you can say, even if Hashgacha Klalit, there should not be Hester Panim when such gross abuses are happening. Nevertheless, it is a little easier. But I don't think it solves the basic issue. I just had one final point as a follow-up to that. In the Nevi'im, we have two basic metaphors for relationship between Kadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael, between man and God. One is the Eved and the Adon. The other is lover and beloved. And then you have the parent-child, which is somehow fuses the two of these into some kind of a synthesis. One plausible suggestion, say it's not, doesn't have to be, but it's certainly conceivable, is that Tanakh is using the Chatan Kala, Dod Ra'aya, for Am Yisrael as a nation, Kadosh Baruch Hu, and the Eved Adon is more about the individual. or particularly the first part is what's important. That the idea that man and God are so close, and like Achtana Kala relates more to Am Yisrael and Am, and not to individuals. The Rambam did not think so. The Rambam explained Shir HaShirim as a metaphor for the soul, not for the nation. Rashi's interpretation of Shir HaShirim assumes that the analogy is to the nation, because it's a historical analogy there. It's a point to consider. I'm not saying, I don't want to say anything definite, but it certainly is an option to assume that the Chatan Kala relates more to Am Yisrael and Am, and then the matter of Hashgacha Pratit here fits better, of course, the nation, less individual.
Just going back a few steps, quite far. On the Ramban, just clarify, Hashgacha Pratit, and is it just like Hashgacha Pratit and not Hashgacha Pratit, or is it like 95% Hashgacha Pratit this person?
Is there either
complete Hashgacha Pratit and then not Hashgacha Pratit, or is there like 95% Hashgacha Pratit for this person?
If I remember correctly, not the piece in Vayera, but in Eov, he talks about gradations also, particularly because he quotes the Rambam. And the Rambam is certainly like that. The Rambam certainly talks about not either black or white, yes or no, but rather, the Rambam talks about a spectrum in which you have various gradations. And the Rambam quotes him provingly, so I assume the same is true of him as well. It's also reasonable.
Learning how, it seems also that the Rishi addresses a little bit briefly before, but how exactly does this fit in with the Ramban in Bo, where he posits that each part of, like each aspect of nature is continuously a miracle?
This ongoing relationship between Kadosh Baruch Hu and the world, this ongoing relationship between Kadosh Baruch Hu and man, but how the relationship will translate and what the intensity is can differ between person to person. In other words, the more you talk, let me say the following. The more you talk about Kadosh Baruch Hu being transcendental and the master of the universe, or Kima Shamayim Matal Haaretz, and the more you emphasize the glory, the grandeur, the majesty of Kadosh Baruch Hu, so first of all, you're more universal. And secondly, you're more democratic in the sense that everyone is equally insignificant. The more you emphasize the ability to approach Kadosh Baruch Hu and to be near and intimate, so I think you create, then you could talk about you create differentiation. There's more intensity, less intensity. Just to give an example, if you look how the Torah describes Matan Torah in Shmot Perek Yutet, which focuses upon with the majesty and the glory, Hagvelt Avak Kideshto, right? Everyone is away. In other words, Ish lo yale imach, and everyone is equally distant. In the Perek of Dalid, which emphasizes much more the intimacy and the nearness, so there, Moshe, you have Moshe, Aaron, Chur, Shirin, Zkenim, and each one is closer. If I remember, Ramban there also points it out. But he talked about these Zkenim, they're different, they're concentric circles, each one having a different level of kibbutz to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So relationships can have different levels. I think it's like this. You have to be careful that the close relationship doesn't come in the cheshbon of other relationships. In other words, a person should love all children equally and not have one relationship cause it to be worse. But nevertheless, your relationship with your children makes your attitude to your brothers or your cousins different. So I think it's possible. So, once more, when all said and done, I'm just trying to present Ramban's position and to offer some thoughts or comments about it. At the end of the day, the way Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world is his, in other words, Le'irani ha'adam v'chai. We can speculate, but at the end of the day, it's beyond our ability to know the answer to all this. All you can say is, how do we experience? What does it mean to us? I certainly think there we should have somewhat of of dialectic almost. On the one hand, we should recognize, we should try to experience before tefillah, because Baruch Hu knows what's going on with us, He cares about each and every one of us, He knows each of us. We can approach Him, we can ask for a special treatment, we can tefillah go and ask for special treatment and the like. On the other hand, there's a certain humility and a certain humbleness that you need. Yes, because Baruch Hu runs the world, I'm only... when all said and done, yes, I'm part of Am Yisrael, he cares about me and the like, but he's not going to change the whole world for me. In other words, maybe I'm not the center of the universe, and maybe he has rules and regulations, and I have to adapt myself to his rules and his regulations, and live in the context of these rules, and and recognize that, and be over the Shem nevertheless. There's a certain recognition also of each individual's place, and because Baruch Hu doesn't know him anything, because Baruch Hu has certain rules that he has to conform to and accept that that's the way the world is run. It's a proof of your anava as well. As Shekhar Pratit, I'm going to create great closeness, but it's also a certain danger of. And emphasizing the intimacy with, because Baruch Hu doesn't owe you anything, and there's an acceptance you have to accept that he does things where he likes it. Now, this is one of the answers of Tzadik V'Ra'lo. When the Rambam talks about Tzadik V'Ra'lo, so he quotes immediately the Gemara about, the whole premise of Sunday's question is that man is at the center of the universe. Rambam says, man is not necessarily the center of the universe, and learn to live with that idea that she's not the center of the universe. Okay, others including Rabban, disagree. But it's like this: it's important to live with the recognition that man is at the center of the universe, because Baruch Hu's dialoguing with man. On the other hand, it's no less important to live with the recognition that you're not the center of the universe. And when a person recognizes he's not the center of the universe, you're certain anava and tzniut, which are important to have and to always figure into the system as well. So, okay. After all this, let's take a brief foray into Chayesar. Okay, now, since Chayesar is a short parish, of course, and interestingly enough, Ramban and Perek of Dalit, the whole story of Rivka and Eliezer, the Ramban is relatively he writes very little there. He has a long, long piece in Pasuk Aleph, which is in Kabbalah. But the actual encounter between Rivka and Eliezer, he didn't say much about it. He talks more about Avraham ben Echet and Avraham's last days later on. Let's take for a moment. We'll try to grab two, but let's start with Perek Chafei Pasuk Chet. Zaken v'savea. V'yamat Avraham ben Shino Chamesh v'shivim mea shana. Zaken v'savea. What does it mean v'savea? What does it mean that he died savea? Especially because no, it's a sva yamim. Shira'a kol nishat libo v'sava kol tuva. V'chein v'sva yamim, sh'sva nashu b'yamim v'lo yit'ave sh'chadshu b'yamim davar. V'chinyan sh'mar b'david v'yamim v'sva tova sva yamim v'oshu b'chavod v'hu sipur chazdei Hashem ha'tzadikim v'bidat v'yamim sh'lo yit'avu b'motarot. K'inyan sh'mar b'yamim t'avad libo to be savem is to be content. And to content, the way Rabban dies, after he dies, because he's achieved everything he wants to achieve Olam Hazeh. There's nothing left to achieve Olam Hazeh. Now, this requires, and this is Rabban's point, requires a dual attitude to Olam Hazeh. Or, excuse me, it requires a dual point. One is, that indeed, because Rav was good to him, that indeed he's received whatever he wanted. Now, of course, Avraham Avinu had a life which wasn't easy. He had fertility problems to the age of 100. had the Akedah Etz Nisyonot in Avraham. The way Ramban sees it, at the end of the day, or at the end of the days, Avraham arrives at the truest point of life with this content. That because they had a happy and good life. Now, this requires, because Rachel grants you a good life. Vashem Beirachat Avraham Bakol. Secondly, this is my second point, means the person has to accept that he, at some point, he recognizes and realizes that he's achieved whatever he wanted. He doesn't try to add on new desires and new whims. So the first point is, they grant them all this good. And they receive all this bounty from him. Number two, he doesn't want more, he's not greedy, he doesn't want more than he should be having in the world. In other words, it's possible to grant it because what Rabban is describing, and to say this in the next few words, Rabban is basically trying to point out a mindset which can never be satisfied. That whatever it achieves, it desires more. That the holiday of contentedness doesn't exist. That can't be satiated. It always wants. It's always demanding and expecting more. That now Tavat Libonatatelo means when he received that he was content. He didn't demand more. The lo question emar b'shar shibo ev kesef lo yisba kesef. The amru ain adam b'tzimer olam b'chatzit tavu tav biyado. Yesh b'yado manem b'tavem atayim. Yisim atayim b'tavem asal b'amelut. Now, there's an interesting point. The Ramban talks here but about Drake and Avraham Avinu that it's both a bracha, but also it's a value judgment about Avraham Avinu that he knows not to demand, he knows to stop at a certain point. And the Ramban sees it as a human flaw. Now, what do you do for you? You give them a finger, they want to hold hand. Yesh lo maner otzer 200, yesh lo maner otzer 400, yesh lo maner otzer 800, etc., etc., etc. Which is psychologically often true. It's rooted in human ambition. The human ambition is one of those capabilities that without it, man would never achieve anything. Without ambition, the world would basically be paralyzed. You couldn't even have a chazan for Ma'ariv, right? If no one has any ambition to be a... And certainly you couldn't... No one would lead the country, no one would build buildings. Ambition is the fuel in which the world runs, in a sense. On the other hand, of course, it's also dangerous. It's very flammable and it can easily get out of control. So the Rabban here is assuming that Mishishlo Matayim was Abamut, at the end of the day, is negative. The person has to know when to call it quits and when to be satisfied. And the Rabban says, with the inability of human beings to ever be satisfied, he's just a moral problem. So I'll just report Avraham Avinu wanting more. Now, take your own Gemara in Tanis. Tzadikim enem menucha lo b'olam hazeh v'lo b'olam haba. Shneimar yilchu michai lechai v'elokim b'tzion. That describes a different picture. And if you look at Chazal, right, you're often two different pictures of olam haba. One is, tzadikim yoshvim v'atotem b'roshem v'nehenim miziv ha-shechina. Right, what the Rambam adopted. And it's basically a world where you're passive. You're enjoying the fruits of your labor. There's another one which is Eila Minucha Lo Balam Azeh Velo Balam Haba. It's constant activity, ambition, action. So of course over there it's what man demands of himself. It's not what man is expecting to be granted. It's what he's demanding of himself. But nevertheless, you're getting a whole different picture of... in this case, of Olam Haba, but also of where you should arrive at. That Gemara is assuming perpetual movement, perpetual ambition. So ambition for positive things, but always forward movement. The Gemara is assuming, no, at some point you become stationary. So, I have everything, I don't need anything more. My Rosh Hashanah in high school, Rabbi Bina Zatzal, Yotzei this week, I think. He used to say like this: Mishesh lo manerot zematay, shem manerotay matzav bameod, hamechushav bidvarim ruchaniim. That's a statement, a spiritual statement. Person knows two maselech, one know four, knows four maselech, one know eight. He's got a lot of door, he's trying to be the God of door for all generations. In other words, you should always have constant ambition. So Rabban here was talking about material possessions, but it's quite different. You know, the posture here is very, you know, it's, at the end of the day, recommends a certain amount of being passive. I don't know if all sources or all Bali Machshav would agree with this necessarily. Bereshit Rabba Amru HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer L'Tzadikim Etan Tzachah Shu Atid L'Yiten L'Olam Haba V'Nafsham Sve'a V'Hem Yeshanim Nitaru HaChamim Bazeh U'Pesho HaKatu Shavar V'Sve'a B'Mareh Hazeh. So Rabban at least really describes this picture. The person has achieved everything. I mean, we ask ourselves, what about nachas from the Enikalach? He has more nachas from Yaakov Avinu. He doesn't want more Torah to study. No, it's, the Rabban describes a process. Now, the way it's very beautiful in this, the person is able to reconcile himself with the fact that Olam Hazeh is basically your duration is limited. You achieve whatever you're supposed to achieve. There's certain reconciliation here with material, with life as an organic being, and basically you achieve what you have to achieve, and you can now move on to other pastures and other fields. So to speak, it's time to go meet Kadosh Baruch Hu B'Olam Haba. On the other hand, you know, there's also something very, so far, very passive here, which I mean, you know, the idea of creativity and take the Midrashim of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Midrashim would describe Moshe Rabbeinu's unwillingness to die. So on the one hand, now the Midrashim present Moshe. There are lots of Midrashim and they employ multiple techniques over there. But part of it describes fear. But part of it is not only fear, part of it also is Moshe Rabbeinu's desire to do more good in the world. The same pasuk, if I remember correctly, the same pasuk, Wa'ev Keset, Lo Yizba Keset, the Ramban here quotes negatively, Mishesh Lomaneh at some time, the more Makkos quotes by Moshe Rabbeinu positively, Wa'ev Keset, Lo Yizba Keset, Ze Moshe Rabbeinu, they want to do more mitzvahs. Let me just double check, but I'm pretty sure. Dara is the Fiyudah Mudalif. Dara Shabbi Simai. Mai Dichti, Vayiv Kez Loiz Ba'Kesef. Umi Ohev Behamon Lo Tuvah. That's the Pasuk in Kohelet. Vayiv Kez Loiz Ba'Kesef. Ze Moshe Rabbeinu. Shaya Yudea She'ein Shelo She'im Shabbi Ba'Den Kotod Ad She'ein Ad Shalif Chush Shabbi Ba'etz Kenan. Ve'amar Mitzvah Shabbi Liyadi Akaimena. That's the Gemara presents Moshe Rabbeinu there. It's unnecessary because the Arabic won't be in effect for another few years. But it's a mitzvah. He wants Ohev Kesef, Lo Yizba Kesef, mitzvot. And the whole idea of his unwillingness to die. Once more, Midrashim have different presentations, but one of them is he wants to continue leading Am Yisrael. He wants to continue doing mitzvot. He wants to zchut v'eretz Yisrael. He doesn't say ani soveh. He feels that life should be. There are similar descriptions of the Gra. In other words, that also that basically activity b'olam hazeh should be perpetual and ongoing, and the person shouldn't go and say, "Well, I've been here, I've done that, I've seen it all, and now I'm saveh." So, the Shabbat, on the one hand, paints a very beautiful picture of Avraham Avinu, happy, content, and especially reconciled. It's if you can tell yourself to death, is a tremendous madrega. It's he's reconciled. He's it's almost a chassidish picture. But you reconciled. You're not upset. You've achieved everything. You're happy. So in a way, it's something very very moving about it. Very inspiring. And then it's also something very somewhat disturbing. That man should be full steam ahead, more mitzvot, and the like. So, and it leads you to some kind of ambivalence against Ramban, but it's really worth reflecting upon this whole passage.
And not to deny the historical aspect of the Allah, but could Ramban also be talking in a somewhat literary sense? And that only in Tanakh can we really find a person who is reached such a level that he's done.
Look, I don't see this like the tension that you hinted before between history and literature. If it's true literary, so the Kodesh Baruch could also have it happen, right? In other words, Kodesh Baruch thought that this is the proper presentation of Avinu, so he would also grant him all of this. Let's grant that for most people it doesn't happen because most of us are not the level of Avinu. But my question is, even if you talk about the level of the ideal, is this indeed the ideal? Is your ideal figure an Avraham Avinu figure or a gruff figure? And I just leave it. There is a sense in which if we talk nowadays about old people, it's, at times it's different. There's a fury, F-I-E-R-Y, death, which you feel like a person fights death and for various reasons. At times you feel your person should just sort of slowly slipping away, like passing quietly. And we often see it physically. Some people die out of disease or accident or disaster, and then it's, excuse the phrase, dramatic. And so you simply have a person who's his body has reached the end of the rope. There's no. The bicycle expires, so to speak. It's expiring, not imploding or exploding. It's simply expiring and slipping away quietly. We say that physically, and there is a certain sense of, if you want, of reconciliation. When a person dies, just slips away, and you realize the body gave every hand and no longer has anything left in it. It's the last drop in the tank is gone. There's something more harmonious and gentle about it. If you want, maybe a bit more positive. But the other, so now not talking physically, but here the question is: do you make an analogy spiritually as well? Do you talk about spiritually that someone is? Gives you the same point, that it's time to move on, or not? What's my? There's something to be said for both directions. I leave it here as some thought for food for thought.
I think for a person like Avraham, obviously he could have still done a few more details, but the main goals of his life were definitely complete. And once he married off Yitzhak, as opposed to Moshe, he didn't even enter Yisrael.
You're right. So Moshe, I sort of glossed over that difference, which is crucial. But some of the Midrashim though presented not only Moshe Rabbeinu and Eretz Yisrael. Some of the Midrashim, it's like Moshe facing death bichlal. In other words, Midrashim used Moshe Rabbeinu's death as an occasion to confront all issue of death bichlal. I said the following: it's pretty easy, the main goals. But that's not my question. Do you say I have a checklist of goals, I've achieved them all, or you say it's time to take the new goals? I promise that that's once more, I think there's a certain beauty in both approaches. If you want to hear some dialectic, if you want, so before, just think about this. Tov, I was hoping maybe to get into to sneak in another one, but yeah, Shabbat for that.
The dumb